Hello, welcome to True Hoop with me, Gerard Hector, and Coach David Thorpe. How are you, sir?
I am great. Happy holidays, my friend.
Yes, happy holidays indeed. This will be the last True Hoop episode before the Christmas holiday coming up on Monday. For those of you that are able to and can celebrate, we hope that you are doing some fun things with your family and friends and loved ones. David, I know you're going to be doing some fun stuff over the weekend, early into next week. I know you're looking forward to just seeing your kids and your brothers and their kids and all the good things happening there.
Did I tell you what we're doing?
You did.
Did I tell you about Silent Disco?
Yes, of course.
Did I really?
See, this is when you normally say, I'm an old man, Gerard. I forget what I tell you.
Exactly what I was thinking. I'm also lucky enough to talk to a few people every day, so I don't remember who I've told it to, but yeah. We've got, I think, God, I bet we'll have 20 people going, maybe close to 20 going to a Silent Disco. I have to get away. My office is, people might call it a man cave. It's my job. This is where I do my podcast and my writing. It's my writing and viewing room for computer stuff. And then my other side of the office is where the TVs are. It's a little bit stressful. I'm in here a lot. And I know even if my kids are in town, I'll end up coming back in here. And so we're going out to St. Pete Beach for a couple of days. My kids will only be with us a little bit. They're going to be hanging out at their house to see all their friends. I need a break. Mm-hmm. So we'll do Silent Disco with them. But I'm going to go see my brother and one of my brothers, and he's going to come up here and just to get away. And then I'll probably spend some time on Christmas Day with my wife's family was raised Catholic. So they celebrate. Okay. We've been doing it with them forever. What about you?
We're going out to Long Island this weekend to see my partner's parents and family. So we'll do that for a night. Then we'll come back on Christmas Eve. We'll be low-key Christmas Eve night. And then Christmas Day, we'll cook and have a couple friends over. Drink some nice wine, courtesy of Coach David Thorpe. David was so kind and generous to send us some lovely wine from a wine subscription company. He is a member of Naked Wines, which we mentioned on our holiday gift guide. David sent me some delicious vintages, and they're going to be drunk over this holiday season. They've already started. It's a good time. David said to me, don't worry, you will have enough to keep you going throughout the holiday season. And he is right. I'm laughing because I was thinking to when it arrived, because you were so one of the things you guys need to know about David. David's very meticulous, and like when things are supposed to arrive at a certain time, like he is like, he needs to know, like, did this thing get there? Like, you know, this is the organizer and the coach in him. So he kept telling me, it's coming. And I was like, all right, Devin, you know, no problem. I got doorman, no problem. So when it actually arrived, picked it up and brought it upstairs, and I called David. And I rarely call David, not because I don't like to talk to him, but because we text or whatever. Time, yeah. So he answers the phone. What's the matter? I'm like, nothing. I'm just telling you the wine got here. Well, you called me. I was like, yeah, it's all good.
Yeah. Listen, yeah, I worry. I don't celebrate the victories too well. I suffer through defeat. That's why I didn't want to keep coaching. The victories didn't make up for the pain of losing. Glad you like that stuff. Sounds like you'll have a nice weekend. And I'll try, like Christmas Eve morning, we're going to have a family breakfast. Undoubtedly, I won't have tracked probably seven different games I normally would on the 23rd. I'm taking a night off, but I'll have my laptop with
me. You'll watch on the 24th.
I will with my son, which would be good. Yeah, he gets back in town the day before after a game he'll have, and we'll probably watch film together. I just talked to him on the phone actually about it. He's excited about that. He loves the game too. It's that part doesn't work for us. The work part is thoughtful of things and mindful of things, and that part is work. That's a grind like anything else. But actually just watching stuff on film, I cut up 100 to 200 clips almost every day of my life. Yeah, no big deal. Yeah.
And that'll be good because, you know, eventually running a team is something Max wants to do, right? So watching film with you and you seeing what he sees and he's saying, well, Max, that's not really what I'm seeing here. Here's what I'm actually seeing, right? Like, and it's a learning step, right? And it's a different way. Because I'm sure when you were younger, you had father-son teaching moments. This will be different kind of father-son teaching moments.
Well, I without going into any detail, I'll just leave you with this. The reason why I spoke to him this morning is the other night, Florida State had a nice win. They had been playing poorly for a little bit, but they had a nice win. And one of their players played really well. And I said something to Max. It's one of my son's closer friends. He's friends with everyone, but I know he spent a lot of time with this one player. And he played really well. And Max said, yeah, I cut some clips up in the morning and said it to him. I said, let's cut some clips. Like, what are you talking about? He's like, yeah, just some inspirational stuff to get him to remind him of who he really is as a player. And right then, a light bulb snapped, like, oh, this guy can work for me one day if he wants to. And so that's what I talked to him this
morning.
That's
so you. That's what you do. That is so you.
Yeah, I said, Max, if you're already doing that. Well, I kind of knew, but I didn't know he was sending clips. I knew he was just being inspirational as a person. I said, my business is booming, and I need help, buddy. And I trust you more than anyone on the planet. And he's into it. I said, I'm not making you do it. We got to go get a second master's first. And he's already got offers and all of that. But just know that if you don't like the gig that you have in college or the MBA, dad could really use your help. So he was fired up about it. Yeah. So he's got some stuff going on. He's going to do some work with P3, it looks like, which will be good.
Ooh, that'll be fun.
Before he starts his next program, he has another year of eligibility. Yeah. He's got some options here. But
down in Atlanta or on the West Coast with P3?
We'll have to figure that out. He's one of his best friends. Two of his best friends live in LA that played at Florida State. And then Atlanta is pretty close to where he is in Tallahassee. So
yes,
we'll see what Marcus Elliott and Adam and the guys there at P3. I really value what they do a lot. They could teach my son a ton.
Incredible
and
stuff.
I just wanted him to know that he has one more option to consider, and dad could really use it. But there's no pressure. And he's like, Dad, he literally said to me, he's starting to grow up. He said, Dad, I know that you want what's best for me. We're separate from what's best for you. Don't ever worry that I'll feel like you're pressuring me, because I know you're not. So I can't wait to tell my wife that you know, our kids know we've lived our life and we're still living our life. They got to live theirs. We're not going to micromanage that.
David, I know that made you beam inside and outside as you're beaming on this podcast. Basketball is the Thorpe family business. You know, many fathers want to pass their business on to their sons, right? Whether it be law, whatever. Well, this is David's business, right? Basketball on the practice. And maybe if Max wants to do that particular part of the basketball business, Dad is waiting to show him the ropes and bring him on board.
Yeah, you suffer losses in a very different way when you work privately. I don't know that I'd handle it as well publicly, but there's always another game. That's the beauty of the business, right? Anyway, on to business ourselves.
On to business ourselves. We're going to have an action-packed show today. There's so much going on. David, you know, one of the joys of getting to work with you and Henry is it allows me to be smarter about basketball and think about the game differently. And I've said this to you numerous times, even before I knew you, and I listened to you when you're on ESPN, right? The first lesson I learned from you was, okay, when you go to a game, try not to watch the ball. I'm like, David, that's really fucking hard to do.
Unless the guy with the ball is Ja Morant.
Well, yeah.
Probably should have added that part. Yeah. Sometimes you do have to watch the ball.
Well, yeah, we'll get to John later. Woo,
we will.
He was exciting. And actually, he's kind of related to what I want to talk about here. And I was thinking about the challenges that a player faces if he is the primary ball handler for his team, the mental and physical toll it takes on a player. And I was thinking about it just in the context of watching various point guards. Of course, Tyrese Halliburton and the pace at which Indiana plays with. I'm like, okay, physically, it's got to be a toll on you, but mentally, it's got to be a toll on you as well. The Grizzlies we talked about, well, with Ja out for the suspension, how it forced Desmond Bane and these other guys who are not primary ball handlers to become primary ball handlers, and I could see it on Bane, the toll it takes on you, right? Because it's like, oh my God, I got to organize and get these guys here, but I'm also a shooter scorer. You always talk about that, the balance of knowing when to do your thing and when to get everybody involved, and then watching Booker in Phoenix and how, you know, he's been doing it well and he did it early in his career, but he's hit a little bit of a lull here lately. And I'm like, I think this is weighing on him. Like the point guard, the lead ball handler responsibilities, because you see it sometimes where he's just like, I'm exhausted and mentally exhausted, which means I'm physically not moving. So I wanted to talk to you about the challenges of being a primary ball handler for a team.
There's multiple levels to it. So one of the easiest things, you'll laugh at this probably, but watch a game where one team scores, the other team now is advancing the ball, or they don't score, but it's not a fast break, which happens a lot too. Watch the other four guys running down the court on offense that aren't bringing the ball up. They just run down the floor. They jog down the floor. They're not looking for the ball. They're going to their spot, and it's like they take like a 5-second timeout. Mm-hmm. And then when they get to the spot, they turn around, okay, game on. Well, the ball handler doesn't get a chance to do that. There's no break. And I really think there's a science probably to that, where those little 5-second naps, so to speak, which happen all the, not every time, but all the time in games, often, I think that helps a little bit. The primary ball handler doesn't get that. So when you know, remember when Houston picked Chris Paul up, acquired Chris Paul, the idea was to give James Harden a bit of a break. And it wasn't just a break in playmaking in intense situations. It's also just the relief of, well, I don't got to be worrying about getting stripped this time. Because let me tell you something, as someone who played point guard and whose son played point guard at a high level and still is playing, when you're advancing ball up the floor and some really quick dude is just dogging you and he takes it from you, it's embarrassing in a way that almost no other turnover is embarrassing, or very few others, because it's a guaranteed bucket or dunk for the other team. And there's a pressure to that. Even in the NBA, they might think they're doing it mindlessly, and mostly they are, in a sense, because they've drilled it so much. I think I've talked about a drill I do called the Muggsy drill. I got it from R.C. Buford when I was in my 20s. I was 29 when I got it. Yeah, 28. I would just imagine Muggsy Bogues is hawking you up the court. Because when I was 28, he was a good player. And most players now barely know who that is. So I told them to imagine whoever they hated playing
against. Jose Alvarado, Avion whoever.
Mitchell, yeah, in college. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, Jose is a great one. And so they do it so much, if they're smart, that in games it can be a little bit mindless, almost like driving a car. But like if you're driving a car on a bed of ice, you're not so mindless. Well, that's how it is when a guy like that is guarding you. You can't just be absent-minded, or you're going to lose the ball and give up a layup or dunk, whatever. So that's one aspect, Gerard. To me, the biggest challenge is the pressure potentially of always having to create for someone. It helps. It's nice to be a point guard when Kawhi is on your team or Zion's on your team. those guys take on those responsibilities a lot, but they're not the only ball handlers. When Luka, without Kyrie, has a lot of pressure on him. He really is the only guy. Jaden Hardy does some, but he can't really do it. He's just too young right now. Talented player, but too young. But then the other facet, which I think is the hardest one of all, is the emotional challenge of if I'm conscious – because not every player is conscious of making my teammates happy. So an example I'll give you, a team that I'm watching some, is the Raptors. Dennis Schroeder, I don't find to be a very mindful player. He never has been. I was a huge fan of OKC. However, to be fair, in his defense, he's got to please a new coach who wants to play a certain way. Scottie Barnes is probably going to win most improved player. I've not looked into it at all, but my guess is he's right there. He's really been terrific all season.
He's very good this year.
He wants the ball a bunch. He's trying to get a max extension like Tyrese Haliburton got last year. Pascal Siakam's been two-time All-Star, two-time All-NBA player, and has led their team in usage rate since Kawhi left and been very successful. He wants the ball more. OG Anunoby has complained publicly that he does. This was last year, but I'm sure he feels the same this year. It ain't any better this year, that he wants to have more of the offense run through him. And then Gary Trent Jr. is not even starting, is playing for a contract and not doing so well. And so all these guys want the ball more, and Dennis has to manage that. And also, he's a very good player. He's not a great player, and he's not a great thinker, but he's super quick. He does have skill. And if he's conscious of it, he's got to try to keep guys happy and still be sharp. It's hard to do. It's just hard to do. And yeah, he's not great at it, in my opinion. He just kind of hoops. I don't think he really strategizes enough, which is why I have a problem with him. I'd rather him come off the bench and just play. Yeah, then you have to worry about, you know, your second unit. If those guys are bitching, right, well, they'll be third unit or go to the G League. Like, they're not good enough to ask for anything, right? You know?
Yeah.
And so it's great that you bring this up. I don't know that it's the hard. I've written an article in True 2 years ago saying the center was the hardest position.
Center.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we're fighting over hairs here.
It's all hard.
It's yeah. For those two positions, there's enormous challenges: physical, mental, and emotional.
Yeah, for sure. It's just it really. I was just watching. And I'm like, man, this is not easy. I mean, of course, me and basketball is not easy. But I was like, you guys really got a lot going on. I love how you broke that down there. And this, of course, you know, I was thinking about that in the context of Ja Morant and his return, and what a return it was, David. And the Grizzlies, as we talked about, have so many problems on their team, right? The injuries, of course, they've taken so many guys out. And I kept saying to myself, but you know, Jock can't fix all of those problems. Well, but he can fix a lot, right? Like, there is a way in which it just frees up and it unburdens. And you saw it in Desmond Bane. You saw it in Jaren Jackson. I'm like, wow, you guys just look so much freer. You mentioned Taylor Jenkins, how it frees him up as a coach. Because he can just be like, all right, Josh is going to run this play here. So he was awesome. 34 points, 6 rebounds, 8 assists, including that game-winning at the rim floater with Herb Jones on him, where he not only spun into the lane, he spun and then in midair went to the other side to get the... I was like, what? How do you even... It's just ridiculous. Herb Jones is a really, really good defender, long, and didn't matter. He scored anyway. And it was... We talked about when Ja would come back. It's like unleashing a Ferrari. Everybody's already played 25 games to slog. Well, this guy, he hasn't been injured, as we talked about on our call this morning. He was just out because he did dumb stuff with guns. Well, he's been, you know, working on his game. He's been resting. He is ready to go. And this could be quite a launching pad for Memphis. What did you see when you watched Morant in that game on Tuesday night?
I want to link the two things together like you were doing. I've been lucky enough to coach, as a high school coach, a player like Ja. He wasn't as good as Ja, though. I think for any old fans, you remember Kevin Johnson? Yeah. I had a guy that I thought was a nice Kevin Johnson. His name is Anthony Foster. He might be a grandfather now. He's got to be 50 something. Anthony was 6'2", could 360 dunk, was incredibly quick and fast, could shoot, made 50 free throws in a row pretty much every day, in a row, every day. Our head coach was drafted by the Bulls when I was a high school coach. I was an assistant varsity. He was a great shooter also. And they would have a competition who could make 50 in a row first. It was amazing to watch. And just when he's on the court, everything started with, okay, Anthony's going to beat his man off the dribble. And he could do anything. He was only 17, 18. He ended up being a very, very good college player. And I think if he had a better agent, he'd been an NBA player. It just makes it easy. And Ja, Anthony was the same way. Ja has that swagger, like, and it's not selfish. One of my favorite things about him is that when he is doing his thing, a lot of times players are strutting their stuff and it's about them. And it really, I'm offended by that. It bothers me. It's one of my pet peeves. I don't feel that way about Ja when I watch him. I feel like he's celebrating us and jumping my back, boys, but I'm thinking about you when I'm being my Superman stuff. In Matrix, the beginning, I think, of the second Matrix, they're talking to the operator on the spaceship, like, where is, what's his name, Neo? I always do a Superman thing again, where he just jumps in the air and flies. I feel like that's what it's like watching Ja. Like, oh, I always do a Superman thing. That's what it was in that game, is we just, I mean, including me, I had kind of forgotten, because we hadn't seen him play since last spring, that he's got the Superman thing going on, where he just jumps in the air. He did one. He drove left, jumped off his left leg to the right, and then held on and made the shot. I think he wanted a foul. He didn't get fouled, I didn't think, but he fouled himself because it was such a hard shot to make.
He fouled himself.
He's just tough, boy, tough. Yeah, he's and I think your point is right about the other guys too. We've said this before on the show, and I've written about it. There's something to be said about when you know, oh, I got Superman on my team. And he's playing like that. It's different if he's not playing. When Zion's playing well, the Pelicans have a different look about them. And Ja just has, and he's got an edge about him as much as he did before. No, I know you want to talk about some of the other things people have said. Mm-hmm. This is, mm-hmm. You know, it's easy. We've talked about this, you and Henry, and sport washing, and sports can help wash. You can forget about the other stuff. I don't think this will be so easy for him just to forget about. Good, which it's good that it mm-hmm. won't be. Mm-hmm. Fans are happy to forget about it. But right. People in the business, we can't. And the team can't. No doubt. Because it'll happen again.
Yeah.
You better be mindful of how you fucked up. You know?
Yeah.
You get in a car accident. Absolutely. Without your seatbelt on and you survive and you know you got lucky, you didn't get thrown through the windshield, you should be a lot more mindful to never make that mistake again. You've learned your lesson. I hope and believe that he has. He's a young man. He's dealing with a lot of stuff. That seems like it's all puppy dogs and ice cream, but it ain't. Right. It ain't. There's a responsibility to what he's accomplished in his life. And I hope it gives him real perspective. And I hope one day he can talk about it when he's a world champion. Like, you know, when I fucked up every day I woke up saying never again, or whatever it is that he's going to say. I hope that's the case.
No, I think you're dead on. You know, to your point about John not being selfish, I don't know if you heard, like, so after the game, they interviewed him and Bain about, like, what we're going to do. So when they had, when the Pelicans had, I think it was CJ, missed that wide open three or whatever, and they had the ball back, Ja was going to go down court, right? And Taylor calls a timeout, and you saw Ja get mad, like, ah, why did he call a timeout? Like, and Henry often talks about that, right? In those moments, I think players prefer the unsettled situation because it gives you an advantage, right? Because they're like, crap, who are we going to match up with, Cross, whatever. Anyway, so they said, he went to the huddle and said to Bane, so we're going to run a post spot for Jaren, right? And Desmond said, no, you're going to take it. Like, he's like, all right. So that whole part about not being selfish, right? I think he does want his guys. And Jaren played well in that game. So it's like, oh, you know, they got nobody that can really guard him down there. Let's run something for him. No. This is you, 12. And he said, well, they called my number, so I guess I have to deliver for him. I thought that was cool. And to your point about what he went through and, you know, he's a young guy, 23. You know, it's all learning, right? I mean, you talk about it all the time. I talk about it. I was an idiot at 23.
He's just a little bit older than my son and daughter. Yeah, I know like, how young they are.
Like, just dumb. And I had plenty of guidance and all the things. And if you gave me millions of dollars and stupid those would have assuredly happened.
And you know what's worse? What's worse is, and this is something I get to see firsthand, is because my son plays basketball, my daughter has an internship and a jobs. Like, people can talk straight with them, and they have to take it. Thank goodness for that. I have that because I have a wife. Right. So she's less impressed with me than anyone on the planet, except for maybe my kids. Thank goodness for that. Henry's pretty tough, too. He's happy to tell me I'm an idiot, which I'm fine with. I love that. It's what keeps us sharp. These young millionaires, and I mean, they're not. He's not making a million in one.
Right. Okay. Multi.
He won't be far away from making a million plus a week every single week, right? I mean, he's not far from the next deal is going to be 50 plus million a year. So who holds him accountable, right? Who can hold him accountable? And I don't know that his family does. I don't really know his family situation too well. I don't know that the coach does for reasons we can understand. May not agree with, but we understand it. And so the league needed to hold him accountable. And it's easy to pass judgment. We don't know all the things going on in his life. We only hope that he has figured some stuff out, and I have every reason to believe that he will.
Yeah, and we talked about the league suspension, the 25 games, and there's been so much sort of like revision and talk about it over the past, you know, given what happened with the Josh Giddey situation and Memphis fans in particular. And, you know, every fan base is going to feel protective about their guy. And when something happens to other team's guy and they don't feel the punishment is the same, they want to throw their hands in the air and be like, but wait, this guy might have committed an actual crime. Ja didn't commit any actual crimes. And it's really tough to sort of balance that in your head when you're a fan, because when you're a fan, you're emotional about it, right? Like, you're not rational. You're not thinking like what's ultimately the best thing to do, which is because you love this team and this player so much, it causes you to have these kinds of reactions. And I thought it was interesting because T. Morant, Ja's father, was at the game and they shared a really long embrace, like after he hit the game winning shot. And the one thing I can say from talking to people down there, knowing like T loves his son so much, and there's such a wonderful relationship between those two. You know, Ja always credits his dad with, you know, getting him to where he is for all those hard workouts when he was younger, and T talks about how much he loves his son. But, you know, there were some things in some conversations with reporters T had after the game that made me wonder, like, I wonder if he still gets this. So this was in, I want to say, an Athletic piece. And so he was asked after the game the significance of the moment when Ja hit the shot. And this is T. Shit, it means everything. Everything. All the dedication that we put into everything. That kid ain't did nothing to nobody. I feel bad as a father because I want to take all the blame for anything that he does wrong. Give it to me. But don't do him like that. If he doesn't commit a crime, everybody writes what they write. But not when y'all see the proof is in the pudding. I love every minute I spend with my kid. But to see him going through this when he didn't need to go through, he didn't commit a crime, but at the same time, everything is about this kid proving who he is as a man and as a hooper, trained to go. And I thought the fact that he kept going back to he didn't commit a crime was disturbing to me, David, because while that is true, he's not arrested and did not commit any crime. That's a factual statement. The incidents that caused him to be suspended are concerning. He has a current pending litigation for an incident at his home where he punched a teenager in the face. Now he's saying self-defense, right. And I don't know what right. happened because I wasn't there, but still, there was an incident at the mall where you and your friends, right, threatened a mall employee, right? So there are still incidents that suggest bad judgment. And I think if we set the bar at, well, I didn't commit a crime, that's not the bar I think you want to be setting when you are the face of the franchise and a potential face of the NBA.
I won't get too political on this, but the former president, we don't know if he committed a crime or not leading up to the events on January 6th. But it's not a big leap to say, well, he probably shouldn't get to be president again. There should be laws preventing that. And I think there is in the Constitution. Well, the NBA has their own constitution, right? It may not be all written. Much of it is understood, but they are in the business, as we just talked about last week with Ben, of having people watch their games and care about their players. And you even if you're pro-gun, you're not pro-gun in the way that John Morant was displaying his. Those were more concerning actions. And I think I get as a dad wanting to protect your child. Mm-hmm. I would not have handled it the same.
I was going to ask you what you would do if this was Max. I know it's hard to do, but like, what would you do if this was Max?
So again, because I have been more in the limelight just because of what I do for ESPN and then for in the media and coaching NBA players. I try to take as much a backseat. I don't go see my son's games very much, whether he'd play a lot or not. I try to be as behind the scenes as possible. And I've already told him many times over, never, ever worry if you do get lucky enough to get an assistant GM job. And one day in your late 30s or 40s, if you're super lucky, you're running a team, daddy won't be there watching everything, commenting. You're allowed to do your own thing. I like how, talking about presidents, I like how George W. Bush never once criticized Obama. That is a very normal thing until recently anyway. They've already done it for 4 years or eight. It's freaking hard. I would have liked Mr. Morant to not try to absolve some of the concerning things his son did. If I wouldn't even do the interview. But if you want to do the interview, then just say what's past is past. I was really thrilled to see him play well. The reality is he could have missed that shot. He wouldn't have been the GOAT, by the way. He was amazing in the game. Right. Or they could have lost in overtime and he could have missed three shots in a row. Mm-hmm. It's going to happen. He ain't going to make every clutch shot he takes. What does that mean? That you trained to fail? No, you're going to miss shots sometimes. I think the reason why you're bringing this up is the danger of suggesting, well, he didn't commit a crime, so don't change. That would be really bad for John Morant. And I'll be very direct. The business that I have of helping players is strictly based on the idea that if you play better, you'll make more money. That you have a finite window of time. I was telling a player recently who doesn't want to play in particular cities. Who gives a fuck? If those, exactly what I said, I told his agent that on the phone this morning. If they're willing to pay you more than anyone else, and just because it's cold or not a great city, when you retire, you'll be maybe, if you're lucky, 36, 37, 38. I don't even remember those days. And I'm only 58 and 4/5. I'm not old just yet. Mostly sober, but not totally. I feel like I have a lot to give and don't even remember 21 years ago. You won't remember much, but the money will be in the bank. And your grandkids will spend that money. Your great-grandkids will spend that money. That to me is the bigger issue is let's be mindful of the big picture, the long term, so that you don't run into the wall again. And you know this well, Gerard, when people in your life that you love the most are in the dark or refuse to admit the truth, it's easier for you to deny it also. And that'd be a huge mistake for Ja to do. So there, I think he messed up there, Mr. Morant did, and not recognizing we screwed up, we moved on, we don't need to talk about it anymore. He's learned his lesson. Let's move on. That's all he should have said.
Yeah, for sure. I'm glad that on the team.
Yeah.
Marcus Smart and some other guys. Again, you know, Derrick Rose made it very clear that he's not some locker room plant and he's not a babysitter. But, you know, they had some positive words to say. And oftentimes players can hear things better from their peers than they can from others. And I thought Marcus Smart had some interesting conversations about the comments about this. We've sat down and talked, him and Ja, and it really had nothing to do about basketball. It was just about life. Just understanding how blessed we are to be in this spot, to be able to feed our families and do it at the highest level and live out our dreams. And excuse my French, never take this shit for granted because it can be gone in any second. He has had to deal with that. He's had a little bit of taste of it could be gone and understands how to try not to let it happen again. It's good for him to hear how he feels about everything in his life and to see him have a smile on his face. I think that was so key for Marcus Smart, right? Here's a player who never been in any trouble on or off the court. That whole thing in college was nonsense, forever, right? Like, yeah. I'm not even going to wrench from it. We've talked about it before. That was ridiculous. But here's a veteran who's seen things and a mature guy. And I think that realization of this stuff was almost taken away from you, all of it. Like, we're so lucky to do what we do. We play this game. We make, to David's point, and Ja Morant especially, hundreds of millions of dollars.
Oh, yeah.
Why do I want to screw this up ever?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, hopefully that having it being taken away and how close it was to, man, this could really be a problem. The wake-up call, you said, like the seatbelt, right? I got lucky. Next time I'll be more mindful.
I don't know if I ever told you this story before, Gerard, but I had a player almost 20 years ago, 15 or 16 years ago. And his father had been in jail almost his entire life for mostly white-collar crimes. There might have been a little bit of more violent stuff, too. I don't remember anymore. But he got out just as the player got drafted. And this is a player that wasn't even expecting, he wasn't invited to Portsmouth. So forget about the major comp. And yet he still got drafted. I mean, I was lucky enough to train him. I found him a great agent. He got drafted. He got a guaranteed deal. And he ended up doing fine as a rookie, but he didn't work hard enough. And back then I wasn't helping players in season. So he was on his own. He ends up going to another team. I had to get involved to get him another spot. And the dad, who also tried to get paid from the agent the second his son got drafted, which really pissed me off, the dad called me and was complaining about playing time and whatever. And he was saying, and Darryl Armstrong was on the team. It's like, my son tells me that he's just not minding his coaches enough and whatever. And they want him to be like Darryl Armstrong. And there's no way my son's ever going to be like Darryl Armstrong. That's what the dad said to me. And I said, I, to be clear, are we talking about the Darryl Armstrong who's been in the NBA like 10 years after he was in the CBA? Like, that's the guy you won't be like? No, my son wasn't raised that way. And I, of course, I'm thinking to myself, how would you know? You were in jail his entire life. and sure enough, by the end of the season, he was cut and never made the NBA again. We all have to play the game a little bit, Gerard, right? This isn't unique to players. It is true that the more talented you are, maybe the less games you have to play. I'm going through this right now with my daughter who's about to graduate in a few months and has to get a real job. And this coming week, she'll be lining up like three or four interviews already. And you got to kind of play the game some till you figure it out, right? Well, why shouldn't Ja have to do that too? For the money that's out there. I don't think that's a problem. I don't even think it's a problem for him. I think maybe I think part of the suspension, besides punishment, is to give him a break from that. And as I told you before, this was drugs, not guns. But after studying John Belushi's death as well as Chris Farley's, like, it's easy to be enabled when you're a superstar. And so I'm glad that we talked about on the show when he first got in trouble again. Like, I don't know if it was 25 games we said, but there needs to be a serious wake up moment for that young person. So he can go do the things that he's capable of doing. I'll leave you with this. When I was a high school coach, sometimes I'd have parents call me when their sons weren't making their beds. Mm-hmm. It was easy for them just to call me. In one case, right, it was earrings and earrings in their ears. And that same player also liked to dye his hair blonde. He was a handsome kid who thought he could also be a surfer and a skateboarder and a basketball player. And he was a very good basketball player, as it turns out, and tough as nails. But the parents were trying to not get him crew cut, blonde hair, the whole thing. And they would call me and I would say, do you love your parents? Yes. Do you love your life? In your ninth grade, 10th grade? Yes. Like, why are you complicating it? Damn bed. Just pull your shorts up. a nice white kid of ours who thought he was a surfer. He thought he was Spicoli. You know Spicoli? Okay. I'm not even sure he knew who Spicoli was. But that's who he wanted to be and be a basketball player. And I just said, why do you want the drama in your life? Mom and dad care about you. So just don't do these fucking stupid things. And life gets so much easier. And Ja could be a billionaire. Think about this. There is absolutely, how old is he? 23? He is going to make so much money playing basketball. And think about Steph Curry's popularity. Mm-hmm. Ja's a small guy. He's a lot more like, you would never think he's an NBA player. Honestly, if you watch someone in a mall, why would you think he's an NBA player? Right? You can go to dinner. I can go to dinner with my 6'4" and smaller guys, and no one looks. If we're in a city, they don't play in. But I went to dinner a few weeks ago with a 6'10 dude, and everyone just assumes he's playing the NBA automatically. But that's better for your T-score for Ja. Mm-hmm. Right? He's such a charismatic guy.
Yep.
So let it be a great success story. Mark Wahlberg has used that very well. Right? Some of these guys from a rougher background have used that as part of, look at my growth. Whether it's true or not, I have no idea. He has such, I mean, I could be 90 years old and he could be doing a commercial for 60-year-olds in whatever insurance plan, whatever, because he's just he's got an everyman way about him. But he happens to be closer to Superman than every man. Like what he does athletically, I'm telling you, Gerard, like you don't see many like that ever.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Like more athletic than Iverson explosively, I think.
Yes.
Really think that.
He is, again, just watching that game, I was like, and we've seen all the highlights. We've seen him play. Like when he elevates, his head is at the rim or above. I'm like, what the hell is going on with this dude? Literally, I'm like, oh my God. Listen, Memphis fans are happy. Grizzlies fans, NBA fans.
Fucking happy.
Everyone is thrilled. So the last thing I'll leave you with on this job thing. So he was asked in his media availability before he came back last week, right before he was getting set to return. And a local media person said, so there's all these guys that they're saying are better than you. Tyrese Halliburton, Jalen Brunson is going on. And he's like, yeah, who? Okay. He's like, well, I have no control over what people say. And then I think at what point he said after the game winner the other night, I've kept the receipts. Well, I'm just going to say, tonight, the Memphis Grizzlies play the Indiana Pacers and Tyrese Halliburton. Now, to be fair, it'll be the second night of a back-to-back for Indiana on the road.
And they're very different players.
Correct. Very different. But
who would you take?
There might be some fireworks tonight.
So, Gerard, so you had a
starting... Who I think is a better player right now?
No. So you're starting... Oh. Okay. So two ways of doing it. Who would you want for the next 5 years? And who would you want in a playoff series today? Or in a month when Ja's got midseason form going?
In a month, when Ja's got the form going, I think I'm going to take Ja in a playoff series. David, look, going forward for 5 years, I think Tyrese Halliburton's better right now. Like, he just is. He shoots better, right? He doesn't have the explosiveness to his game. I think he's a better playmaker than Ja is. And look, I cannot, neither of them play defense. So that's what that is. I think Halliburton's way worse than Ja on defense, but neither of them play any defense. But I think it's ultimately comes down to aesthetics. Aesthetically, if you are that type of fan, Ja's game is much more, it fires off more things in your neurons if you're that kind of a fan. I get it. The dunks, it's outstanding. But the thing that I can't get past, David, is Halliburton shooting, right? Like that is something that Ja has not yet. I mean, this isn't a 3-month blip for Halliburton either. He's done this now for a couple years. Like he's shown, probably a 40% 3-point shooter on volume. Ja ain't even close to that. And that concerns me ultimately. Going forward with him. But listen, you're going to be great with either one you take.
Right. I would lean Tyrese for what you said. That was when I first saw it is he's just a way better shooter. But it's like you said it. Like if you end up with Ja, like it's really close. Yeah.
Right. And you're losing a bunch of games.
And let me tell you something. There's no reason why Ja can't become a 38% three-point shooter. And if he does that, and Tyrese is still in the first percentile in defense and all of that, right. But then Ja gets the nod. Yeah, they're young. They're both 23. Yes. Yeah, they're both 23.
Young guys.
So were they the same young draft?
One year. I don't think so. Probably a year apart.
I think out of 1 year. I think Ja's a year later.
Because Ja's in that Zion draft. That's Zion and him went 1-2.
Yeah. So that'll be. I'm gonna watch the game tonight. I think it's the only game I'm watching tonight. Maybe I'm watching one late one. Portland. I'm gonna try to watch Portland late night tonight. Yeah, that'll be a good one.
Well, it's funny. You put that me on the spot, that quiz. Who are you taking, Ja or De'Aaron Fox?
Oh, I would probably take Fox.
Yeah, I think so.
Right now,
a little bit more series, defense, the shooting for sure.
Yeah. He's just shooting matters. Yeah, it's sure easier does. When you're Giannis than Ja.
Because right, 7 foot tall and whatever. Good luck stopping people. Me.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. All right, guys, we'll be back after a brief commercial break. Hey, David, we talked about the jubilee and bliss of the Grizzlies and the return of their superstar. On the opposite end of the spectrum, we have the Detroit Pistons. I was going to say arguably. Well, depending on what metric you look at, they're probably the worst team in the league. It's either them or the Spurs. The two of them they're just horrible. Now, the Spurs have Victor Wembanyama and the curling and the glimpsing of, well, we know what our future could look like. I don't know if people feel that way about what's the positive that they see in Detroit. You had an article come out about the Pistons, and in the subhead it said, embrace the suckiness. Well, David, lots of suckiness going on in Detroit these days.
Yeah, I don't know why I decided. Normally I don't come up with my own ideas, probably maybe 40% of the time, but on this one I thought they might set a record for futility, and I want to chime in. So I studied a lot of tape and look at their metrics. And they're paying Monty like $13 million a year. It's a lot of money. I don't know why they chose him, knowing that they're doing this reclamation project, but they did, and they're stuck with him for at least a year or two, I would say, at the very least. They're bad, but a lot of people are quitting on Cade, and I did not have Cade. I had Cade ranked third after Mobley and Barnes, and did not love Jalen Green. I think I had him. Was he in that draft? Was he with maybe fifth behind? Maybe had Suggs at him. Look and see.
Yeah, I'm pulling up that draft class right now.
Yeah, he went number two.
2021 draft Cade, class. That's Cade, Jalen, Evan, Scotty. Jalen Suggs went fifth. Yeah. Giddy. Kuminga.
Yeah, I had Green down, and he's not doing great. I thought Cade was the third best in terms of ceiling and most likely to reach it, but he had 43 the other night. So there's a glimmer of hope. He's missed, I think it was, whatever, 68, 88 games the first 2 years. Killian Hayes has been a big swing and a miss. I don't know why Monty's playing him so much. It might be management making them do it.
To trade him, maybe?
Jalen Duren, he's not playing well enough for any value. Jalen Duren looks like he's got some potential as the next Ben Wallace. James Wiseman's been playing well lately. That's got to be exciting. I love Ausar Thompson, but he can't make a three very rarely, and he shoots too many. He doesn't shoot a lot. He just – one is too many. He doesn't need to do it. He can be such a good defender and playmaker and edge guy. Like, I really like him as a prospect. He needs to learn to shoot, but not this year. He doesn't have to do it. And so I think there's some things they can do to win some games, and they're going to have to just – they have to me, playing better defense and getting Cade to look like an all-star really helps. We just talked about – you did – about Ja's return and what it does to everyone else. Well, Cade can do something similar if he suddenly becomes that guy, which he always has been. He was in high school and college. Everyone's game's a little bit easier. I recommended Jaden Ivey go down the G League a little bit. He's not played much there, at least this year. I still think he needs some seasoning. He's improving, but not fast enough, in my opinion. And by moving out some of the young guys to the G League, you open up some veteran spots, which will help Cade. It's hard when it's all young guys on the court. It's just hard to play well. They probably keep Bogdanovich around for that reason. Bojan Bogdanovic, too, there's a veteran guy there, Alec Burks, also. So I don't think it's a disaster going forward for sure, only possibly. Some people think for sure. I'm not in that world yet. It's only possible that it stays bad for a while.
And I think, you know, the reason they brought Monty in, I assume, is to start with these young group building a defensive identity. You know, one of the hardest things to do is to get young kids, particularly ones that, you know, are highly touted and they all grow up with the ball in their hands and want to score. Yeah, but you got to win on this end of the floor. Well, that hasn't translated either on that side. That's the side of the floor that's better than the offense. But I mean, by better, we're talking about offense is maybe worse in the league. Defense is fifth worst. Okay, so we're splitting hairs about better.
Right. They're stuck in the bottom five on both ends for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see what happens. Look, there is talent. There's for sure talent. We'll see if they're able to, you know, and the NBA season, with it being so long, you know, you build habits, and you often both ways. Losing becomes a habit, and you keep doing that often, things get tough. So I'm hoping that they figure things out, you know, over there in Detroit. David, on Monday, we talked about the Clippers and how they were surging. They continue their winning streak. I think got up to eight in a row.
No, nine.
They are
nine in a row.
Yeah, they are just Kawhi's playing awesome. Look, he has a player option for next year, which I'm going to guess, depending on how this year goes, he's going to opt out and try to re-sign a longer term. And Maxie will remind everybody, yeah, I'm still an MVP level player and should be paid as such for another 4 or 5 years. And David, I mean, he's not doing anything on the court that would suggest otherwise, that he isn't. He's playing awesome. I talked about it on our call late in the game. He had a Euro step in for a layup, and the bench went, Russ mimics the play, and then he's laughing and got that big smile. James Harden's like, oh my God. Like, everybody's just, well, listen, when you're winning, it's fun. Winning is fun. Losing, not so fun. And they're winning, and they're super, super happy. And you're seeing some good mojo over there in LA.
I think that if I watched the game, it was really a great game, really fun. Yeah, Luka versus Kawhi was not fun about that. I just wish Kyrie played.
Great.
Kyrie enjoyed it. He was having fun on the bench. I don't know that any team in the West beats them in a series with Kawhi looking like that. Norman Powell was really good, really smart. There was a great play late in the game when the game was still in doubt where Kawhi drove baseline. And he hit a corner three guy before that. I don't remember who made it. Oh, Amir Coffey made it. And now he's doing it again. I thought, oh boy, they're going to take that away. And Powell just ripped from the opposite elbow, opposite above the break, to the rim for a great pass and score. He's a sixth man of the year candidate. And but Kawhi, just unbeatable. Unguardable, unbeatable. Big rebound in traffic late in the game when it mattered. He may not be MVP of, he won't be the MVP this season, although he's playing every game. Now is the MVP. He's been just otherworldly.
He's just been,
but in the playoffs, Leonard could be the MVP in any series they play in, and probably would be.
We have seen him do it multiple times already. Let's not act like we have not. We've
twice,
seen
it. And if it wasn't for Zaza, might have been a third time. Because they had the KD Warriors
on the. I mean, they were down 30.
It was game one, but still, right. Team. You know, the Mavs won their only championship when they had it come from. They beat down LA in game one and swept them, and it ended up going right through and beat Miami, won the championship. The Spurs were whipping the Warriors when he went down. So yeah, Kawhi, we know he has that look about him, like. Yeah. I can control anything I want and finish it. I can finish the games with my scoring.
And David, they're doing this without Paul George right now. He's missed the last couple of games. Yeah. Like, yeah. I mean, when he gets back, Harden's doing this thing. Russ has got his bench roll. They're surging. They're only a half game, I want to say, behind the Nuggets right now. Look, keep your eye on the Clippers. They are they're exciting.
I won't tell you yet, but I have even a more impressive stat than that. Ooh. Just wait. I'm going to save it for a little later in the show.
they're coming. And again, if they're healthy, I love the body language and what I'm seeing from them. And again, like I said, winning is just wonderful. When everybody's rolling and things are going well, woo, it's as David, puppy dogs and ice cream when that's happening, you know. But it's the NBA season, right? So we know the storm will come at some point again, and how they weather it and all that will go a long way in figuring out how things work. All right, David, Christmas Day is coming up. That is one of the NBA's most important days for fans and everyone alike. Players always talk about playing on Christmas as among their – they grew up watching it, right, when they were young. And I did the same. Obviously not playing in the NBA, but as a kid, this is my favorite. Oh, NBA, we're getting all the Christmas Day games. And we got a nice slate, so we thought we'd preview them for everybody. So in that first game, we got the Bucks at the Knicks. Milwaukee's on a roll right now, 1-5 straight, and the Knicks, David, a little bit of an injury bug. Mitchell Robinson, we knew, was already out, but now it turns out that ankle surgery, he's going to be done for the season, which is a problem.
Oh, I didn't know player, that.
Just got announced last night. So they have the hardship exception that they can sign somebody. But the second piece to this is Jericho Sims, who's playing backup center. He's not going to be out for a few weeks. So they got some, which is why they had to sign Taj Gibson. They got some big man backup, but this is a tough, gritty team. I mentioned up what Milwaukee's doing. That's a nice sort of like noon tip and appetizer to wet your beak before the games begin.
Yeah, I don't expect that I'll be watching games until later. But if you watch the game, to me, Giannis is kind of elevating his game again. We just talked about Kawhi. Here comes Giannis too. When I've watched them play lately, I've really liked what I've seen. And Dame, I mean, they're playing really well, very well. Dame has kind of found his groove. The two of them together have been doing really well as a duo. Is it in New York? I think it's in New York.
It's in New York.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't be surprised if Milwaukee to win. And they just seem to be finding their stride a little bit, which is great to see.
Yeah, no, for sure. And look, New York, Jalen Brunson's doing well. And I was on a New York Post show talking about the Knicks. And look, Brunson's great. And, you know, the things that Knicks fans always think about is, who can we get? Who can we get? And I'm like, guys, I think your team is what it is. I don't know that you have anything that anybody values besides Brunson. And now that Robinson's hurt, that anybody else wants to get you who you want, right? Like,
right. That's the key. It quickly has some value, but
right.
Who wants him over the good player you're going to get back? That doesn't make sense. Yeah. Yeah.
Correct. So this is where they are. All right. Second game, Warriors Nuggets. The Warriors, David, had that impressive win late against Celtics, though. I will say, for the last 3 minutes, I don't think Boston ran a single offensive play of that game. I don't know what they were doing. Either playing clock, let's dribble it out. It was
Porzingis really helps them. Porzingis gives them a focal point. He didn't play. He gives them a focal point offensively that they can sometimes forget about.
Yes. But anyway, Warriors find a little bit of magic. Nuggets, listen, I don't even think Jokic is like in, you know, high gear right now. He's just kind of cruise control in. Murray got back. He's playing well. But, you know, the Nuggets are still doing their thing. I think that'll be an interesting game because with it being the champs, in the defending champs in the Nuggets on Christmas Day, do Steph and the Warriors come out and say, all right, guys, like in many ways, not like this is our season, but this will be another opportunity for us to have a statement win and say, look, we're not dead yet.
In the media, we tend to put narratives on players that doesn't really exist. Or always exists. And I think in the case of Golden State, that's what you just described is where they're at. Like, we've got to get, you know, we've beaten some bad teams here. Or in the case of Boston, the best team in the league, but missing a very important player for them and a potential all-star and has been an all-star. And so, yeah, every game matters to them. Wiggins is coming off the bench, not doing any better. Kuminga's had a chance to grow into a role. Moody, Podzemski, whatever his name is, Brandon, the rookie from Santa Clara. Yep. He's starting now, and he has to do more. Looney's just been okay. What's Draymond's situation?
He is still out. I mean, it's indefinite, and he just started counseling, and they're like, it's at least 3 weeks, so he won't be back for this game.
So, I mean, really, you're watching to see very Steph different players. Steph versus the guy from the Knicks, who I love him. I love Brunson, but it's very different than Steph, yeah. And that's what you're watching. But you're hoping to see Moody and Kuminga play better. And I love the way Golden State plays.
That's a nice contrast. The offense.
Knicks are more.
The Nuggets, not the Knicks.
I mean the Nuggets. Yeah, sorry. So yeah. I just watched the Nuggets last night. Jokic, he's kind of mailing it in, and he's better than everybody.
Yeah, I mean, mailing it in makes it seem like he's not trying.
I'm complimenting him. Okay. He's just not extending himself too much.
Yeah.
And still is the second best player in the league, probably behind Embiid.
Correct.
Yeah. Jamal Murray, okay. At times, good. Mm-hmm. Their bench has been playing better. I really question their bench come postseason. Yes. But it's definitely doing well. I just saw some graphics last night. They've done some really good things scoring-wise. And it's the last two champions, right? The last two champions. I think that's kind of a cool thing. Champions. Both teams play beautiful basketball. Denver does too. Yeah. Mm-hmm. KCP was tough last night. He's tough.
He's just a tough
starting
player.
Five is really good.
Tough player.
Yeah. Their starting five in Denver is much better than Golden State's.
Oh, without question. And then for Golden State, Klay has found his shooting touch over the last couple of games. But as David says, you know, when you're an old player,
you have these moments of brilliance. And he's probably having a moment right now.
If it keeps going, it's a very good sign for them. But I'm not ready to – I don't think they should be spiking the ball and calling for a touchdown right now.
The next game is probably the – is the oldest rivalry in all of the NBA. Celtics and Lakers. That game is in L.A. Now that I think about it, I don't think the Celtics are going home. So they were in Golden State on Tuesday.
Yeah.
They play Sacramento tonight.
Oh, I'm sure they're not going home. Yeah.
So they're definitely not going home. So they're going to be in California for the next few days. Christmas, this is their Christmas. You know, one game, not going to lose mind to the Celtics. Although I always get concerned about their late game execution in games that plagued them in the finals 2 years ago. Hurt them in that game Tuesday. You mentioned Porzingis wasn't there. Lakers, your in-season tournament chance, but since then have been not great, right? I think they've only won twice since the in-season tournament. So Celtics Lakers at Staples, at Crypto.com Arena.
Yeah, whatever. I grew up on Lakers Celtics, so I'm not too interested now. The Lakers, I think, have a chance to be really good this year. They're up and down. I don't know if Porzingis is playing because he came back a couple games ago. Maybe it was last game even after the
World. Hopefully it's not chronic, whatever he's dealing with.
Yeah, right. There's no question. That would be a real concern. Boston's starting five is so incredible. They're the best starting five in the league. And Derek White at 30, was it last night? Didn't Boston play last night? I think they did. He had 30 their last game that I saw. Maybe it was the last game against the Warriors where he had 30, but.
Yeah, it was the Warriors game. Yep. 30, yeah. He hit 30. He was hitting threes. He was really good.
He's the most underrated player, bar none, in the league.
Oh, he's so good. He's so good.
He's amazing. So, it's Lakers Celtics. If you like basketball. That's
huge.
Although I would think the oldest rivalry is Celtic Sixers, no?
Is it Celtic? Maybe it's Celtic Sixers.
I mean, you would think.
I'll look this up.
Wilt versus Russell and all of that.
Yeah.
I wasn't around until 65. And I wasn't paying attention until 72.
I certainly wasn't around then, so.
ask Bob Ryan. He'll tell you.
Yeah, Bob, if he's not curmudgeon-y, he definitely knows. 76ers Heat, we just mentioned. Look.
Good game.
I watched them last night against the Timberwolves. Embiid is just ridiculous right now. If the season ended tonight, he is the MVP.
I agree.
He's just him and Maxey have been incredible as a duo.
Yeah.
Now, this is a regular season, but I want to be clear. Embiid still has much to show me in the postseason, right? Because for all of his regular season success, he's had plenty of playoff failures. So to not sugarcoat it. Hasn't been to a conference finals yet. So, that's all fair. The Heat, Eric Spoelstra is 8-0, David, on Christmas Day. Has not lost a Christmas Day game. And listen, you give Eric Spoelstra, I don't know, a dude from the YMCA, some duct tape, Clay, he'll figure out a way to, keep himself in a game.
Well, they got,
that's just what he does.
I watched them last night. They got Bam back. They got Tyler Hero back. Mm-hmm. And they find ways. They're well coached, obviously. They've got sometimes a really good bench, sometimes not so good. Duncan Robinson's really improved. Mm-hmm. We talked about that.
Yes, yes.
To beat Philadelphia, you got to execute. You have to have a good game plan. They'll have those things. It should be. Philadelphia's a better team, but Miami has got something for you come postseason. Like I think they can trend to be really good.
And if Jimmy's playing, and Jimmy playing against his old team, there's always those little subplots like that should be an exciting game. And the last game, David, Suns versus the Mavericks in Phoenix. We talked about how LA, the Clippers, I love the vibes over there. Everybody's happy. I do not love the vibes in Phoenix. Everybody not happy, not puppy dogs and ice cream over there. They can't guard a dude in a telephone booth right now. I don't know what's happening besides that they play crappy defense. I mentioned earlier when we talked about the pressure of being the lead ball handler. I think it's getting the book a little bit right now. Just some stagnation and really, really tough times are having over there. But still, when Book and KD are on the court, the team is still very good. And you put any of the three guys around them, and that is a plus net rated team. But the rest of that roster, I think we're seeing, is just not very good. Dallas right now, one man bam with Luka. I don't think Kyrie's going to be back in time for this game. And Luka loves playing Book and Phoenix. Everybody remembers that playoff game, a series 2 years ago. Woo, that was that was something. That should be a nice nightcap at 10:30 if you're not drunk on eggnog by then.
I won't be drunk or drinking eggnog. I'm watching that game for sure. It should be a nice battle, Luka versus KD. And both teams are can't really find themselves. Dallas had a good start. They've been kind of rocky ever since. They need Kyrie, and Lively's been out too. Lively's been out. Josh Green's been out. I don't trust some of their players, but Timmy Hardaway's been playing well. That's like, he had a big three last night. They lost the game, but he had a big shot. They're still trying to figure out who they can be.
I mean, Phoenix knows who they are offensively, it seems like, but I don't think that, or let's put it this way. They know who two of their two best players are. I don't know anything else after that is what it seems like to me. And you can't win anything with two guys in the NBA. So that'll be interesting to see how that game plays out. All right, David, top five. As we head into Christmas, number five, who's on your five line?
I've got a tie between Milwaukee and Denver. Milwaukee's on a roll. I watched Denver last night. I liked what I saw from them. They really handled Toronto. It was really never a game, not for long anyway. And they're just kind of cruising right now, I think.
So it's Milwaukee and Denver. So I think I know who did not make your top five. Okay, I cheated on my five line. I still got OKC there. They're still a good team net rating wise, and their record's still good. They're still two in the West. And the Clippers, listen, I can't deny the Clippers, my friends. They're for real. You probably have them a slot higher at four.
I do not.
Oh, even higher that's than great. That.
Yes. I've got Minnesota at four.
Yeah. Okay, that's what I figured.
Because I'm looking at how they're playing.
Yes.
But I always do a little projecting to the way these teams are playing. I think the Clippers are better, but I've got Minnesota 4 and Clippers at 3.
So you guys understand, I mean, by now you should know how these ratings go. David's trying to do a little forward forecasting. Gerard is prisoner of the moment. Oh, you got blown out on national TV last night? You're getting knocked out. It's like the college football playoffs. That sticks. You're moving down a spot. So no, but they're still, look, I didn't kill them. I still have the Nuggets 4 because, you know, look, they've been kind of, as we mentioned, Jokic and Cruz control. They're kind of just, they're doing fine. Yeah. They're okay.
Yeah.
Three
and
line.
Then, who's and then we both line? Have. Who's your third?
Wolves are three because their defense is still very good.
Yeah.
Wolves three.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then we've got the same. Philly's definitely two. Boston's definitely one. Right.
Yes. Yes. Correct. Listen. You know me. I'm often a Philly skeptic.
Yep.
Because oddly enough, even though I'm a prisoner of the moment, I hold their past playoff poor performances against them when I do this. So I know they're going to be awesome in the regular season because I've seen it the last 5 years. Great. Let me see what you do in April. That's my attitude with the 76ers, but I will say. Embiid, they might have a chance, David. Not have it. I think it'll probably happen. Embiid and Maxey will start in the All-Star game.
Yeah. I won't be watching that either.
Well, yes.
Or voting, but your point is Maxey's playing at a high level, right?
High level.
We saw that coming. Yeah. And I'm thrilled for him. It's good for Embiid. It's nice. Harden's doing his thing in L.A. Maxey's doing his thing in Philly. Everyone's happy. Mm-hmm. It's perfect holiday time right now.
See, it worked out for everybody. All right, guys. Enjoy the weekend. Enjoy the holidays. If you're celebrating, enjoy some downtime and relax if you can. Of course, enjoy the basketball. We'll be back next Thursday because we'll be off Monday because it'll be Christmas Day. We won't have an episode then. But we will have a special something dropping for you guys next week. So just keep that feed refreshed. Something will be popping into your podcast feeds. But seriously, I hope everyone has a happy, healthy, and safe holiday season. And we will see you all next week. Take care.